So, good morning, everybody. Can you hear okay in the back? Good? Okay. So, we're going to have a weekend discussing the four thoughts that turn the mind to the Dharma. Okay? And these are basic practices that, when we meditate deeply on them, make us want to attain liberation and full awakening. So they're very essential practices. Sometimes what happens is we study these at the beginning, we practice them at the beginning, we know the outlines, yeah, we got it all down, and then we start studying the master's program or the basic program or some of the philosophical texts. And these practices kind of fade into the background because we're very busy. You know, it takes quite a bit of mental effort to do the studies of, you know, the deeper studies. And so these basic practices fade into the background. And then after a while, we can even begin to feel like, well, I'm learning all this stuff, but why? Yeah? And, you know, and so that's one thing that happens when we neglect these. Another thing that happens is, that could happen, is we hear these teachings and then, you know, at the beginning, we meditate on them, and then we think, okay, I know that. And then when a teaching opportunity comes, a Dharma opportunity comes, to hear that teaching again, you think, well, I've heard it already, I know it. And anyway, it's Saturday and I'd rather sleep in. Okay, and that attitude itself shows that we haven't internalized the basic practices, you know, because there's a certain kind of complacency, maybe even arrogance, that thinks, I've heard these teachings before, I have them down pat, they're for the beginners. I am studying the advanced program and the advanced text, so I don't bother with this baby stuff. Yeah. But what you see when you watch our teachers is that when their teachers are teaching the four thoughts that turn the mind, our teachers go and listen to their teachers teaching it again. Okay. Now why? Yeah. Why? They know the stuff. They know it so well that they even teach it. Why do they go and listen to it again when they've already completed their Geshe studies? Yeah. Why? Because every time we hear a teaching, it goes in on a much deeper level. We understand something that we didn't understand before. Okay? So this is something very important to understand in our Dharma practice, to not become complacent and think that we are more advanced than we actually are. I have tantric practice. I do the long sadhana of Yamantaka and Chakravsamvara and Guru Samaja every day, ding, 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 ring our, you know, shake our drum, ring the bell, you know, and then I have my mala, and I'm, you know. So these kind of things, precious human life, you know, karma, you know. So, you know, this can be a real problem, yeah? Especially because these basic practices really center around abandoning the eight worldly concerns. And the definition, or the not definition, but the boundary line between worldly action and Dharma action is whether or not the eight worldly concerns are present or absent. Yeah. So the eight worldly concerns are taught in the topic of death, which is the second of the four thoughts that turn the mind. So again, we think, oh, I've studied the eight worldly. Yes, I know what they are. There's four these, and they match up as pairs. I got them all down, and they're really bad, so don't do them. Yeah, and let's go out and have a really nice lunch at the break time, and then go for a movie after the Dharma teachings. We can also go dancing, listen to some music, have some good time, maybe even drink a little bit. Yeah? So it's so easy for the eight worldly concerns to sneak in. So easy, you know? So easy for us to get inflated in our practice. You know? His Holiness always says that when you're a beginner in the Dharma, we're not arrogant, because we know we don't know anything. But as we learn more, yeah, then at a certain point we get a little bit puffed up. Yeah, because we're good Dharma practice. We're advanced ones. We even lead the classes. Mm-hmm. Okay, we even sit in the front of the room on a higher chair than other people. Whoa! Okay. So the four thoughts to turn the mind are really quite important practices. Okay? The way I'll teach them while we're sharing the weekend is, a little bit extemporaneously, but also a little bit from the Library of Wisdom and Compassion, from His Holiness's books that I'm helping to co-author and edit. Because he goes through all these topics in the books, and His Holiness's way of explaining things is really unique, and I especially treasure when he talks about his own personal experience of dealing with these things and the impact of understanding certain things, the impact it has on his own mind. So sometimes I'll read from the books and then elaborate on what's said there, and then sometimes just share my ideas. And I also inspire to bring in the 10 innermost jewels of the Kadampas. Yeah? So these are really very precious teachings. They aren't included in the book, in these volumes. But I'm thinking that to work them into subsequent volumes, because they're really quite important, really emphasizing what it means to sincerely wish for liberation and Buddhahood, so that it... these 10 innermost jewels, even if we can practice them this much, they really give us an idea of what the minds of the really true yogis and yoginis are like. So I hope to include that. Yeah. How far we'll get in the weekend, I don't know. Yes. So you have to remember, Lama Zopa is one of my teachers. And as you all know from being at Rinpoche's teachings, you start on a topic. He usually spends most of the time on the motivation. You get about this much of the topic, and then a long dedication. Okay? So I do a shorter motivation, but still emphasizing it. More on the topic itself, and go on and on and on and on about the topic. But once we get to the dedication, it's pretty short. Okay? So, so you have a warning that we may not get through all four. Okay, so I'm doing the disclaimer at the beginning so you don't say, well, I came for all four and I only got two and a half, you know, or not even that. Okay. Okay, so let's start with some recitations. And then we'll have a few minutes of silent meditation to, change our mind. Are these, which version of the recitations? Okay, we can do those. Yeah, our translation? Okay, yeah. There's so many, I asked, because there's so many different translations of the same Tibetan verses that you can get really confused. Okay. You're on.
Namo Guru Vya, Namo Dharma, I am the Sangha. By the merit I create, by listening to the Dharma, may I attain Buddhahood in order to benefit all sentient beings. I take refuge until I have awakened in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. By the merit I create, by listening to the Dharma, may I attain Buddhahood in order to benefit all sentient beings. I take refuge until I have awakened in the Buddha's Dharma and the Sangha. By the merit I create, by listening to the Dharma, may I attain Buddhahood in order to benefit all sentient beings. May all sentient beings have happiness and its causes. May all sentient beings be free of suffering and its causes. May all sentient beings not be separated from sorrowless bliss. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free of bias, attachment, and anger. Reverently, I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind, and present clouds of every type of offering, actual and mentally transformed. I confess all my destructive actions accumulated since beginningless time, and rejoice in the virtues of all holy and ordinary beings. Please remain until cyclic existence ends, and turn the wheel of Dharma for sentient beings. I dedicate all the virtues of myself and others to the Great Awakening. This ground anointed with perfume, flowers Jhumma Meru, for as a Buddha land and offer to you may all beings enjoy this pure land.
The objects of attachment, aversion, and ignorance, friends, enemies, and strangers, my body, wealth, and enjoyments, I offer these without any sense of loss. Please accept them with pleasure and inspire me and others to be free from the three poisonous attitudes.
Idam Guru Radna Mandalakam Niryatayami.
Glorious and precious root guru, sit upon the lotus and moon seed on my crown. Guiding me with your great kindness, bestow upon me the attainments of your body, speech, and mind. The eyes through whom the vast scriptures are seen, supreme doors for the fortunate who would cross over to spiritual freedom, illuminators whose wise means vibrate with compassion, to the entire line of spiritual mentors I make request.
Tayata ho mune mune maha mune soha. Tayata ho mune mune maha mune soha. Tayata ho mune mune maha mune soha. Tayata 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 mune mune maha mune soha.
So good. Go directly into some meditation. We'll meditate just a few minutes. Generate our motivation and really appreciate our present circumstance, that we're healthy, we have the interest in the Dharma, there's the presence of the lineage of teachings from the Buddha, and there's people who are alive who practice those teachings and share them with us. And so let's not waste this opportunity by just hanging out with our friends and laughing and joking. But let's take advantage and attend the teachings and really listen carefully, with the intention to put what we hear into practice so that we can better our own mind and progress on the path to full awakening, so that then our inner beauty, our inner goodness, our Buddha nature can really shine, and at Buddhahood, so we'll have no impediments whatsoever from our side to being of great benefit to other living beings. So with that kind of intention, let's share the Dharma. So the four thoughts that turn the mind begin with precious human life, death and impermanence, karma and its effects, and then the disadvantages of cyclic existence. Okay? And so these four are taught in all the four Tibetan traditions. They're taught in the Pali tradition and in the Chan tradition as practiced in China as well. So these four thoughts are the basic foundation that get us going in practice. Yeah. Now I remember when I first encountered the Dharma, you know, of course, they started out with precious human life. And the first thing is, well, be really happy you're not born in the hell realm. And I'm going, wait, this is too advanced for me. I don't even believe in rebirth. Yeah. I think many of you, maybe most of you, have been brought up in a culture that assumes the existence of rebirth, but I wasn't. Yeah, so, you know, the Westerners that came along at the very beginning, we had to back up a few stages and really start to contemplate rebirth and the nature of mind before we could even get into precious human life. So volume one, Approaching the Buddhist Path, starts with a discussion of rebirth. Yeah, and I've seen that that's the way His Holiness often starts public teachings when he's not in the Tibetan community. And he'll start talking about the two truths, the four truths, the nature of the mind, you know, things that are actually quite profound topics, but that we need some familiarity with at the very beginning. Another problem that many of the Westerners had, just this is just to fill you in, is when we heard, oh, be happy that you're not born in the hell realm. Many people thought, well, that's one reason why I left Christianity, because all this talk of heaven and hell didn't make any sense to us. And then we're coming to Buddhism, you know, and now there's Christian hell realms and Buddhist hell realms, you know. So what do? Choose which one you're going to go to? So, there was a lot of process here of really seeing the difference between what the lower realms means in Buddhism and what it means in a theistic religion where God dishes out rewards and punishments. You know, whereas in Buddhism, there's no rewards and punishments, there's just results of our own actions. Okay. So I'm not going to get into the topic of rebirth deeply right now. If you want to do that, you can bring it up during the Q&A and we can talk about it. But I thought at least I should start with the first of the four, you know, so the motivation isn't the whole talk. Okay. So, it, you know, for me personally, the precious human life, that meditation really didn't do much for me at the beginning, you know, because I wasn't so sure that there were multiple realms. It made sense to me that there was reincarnation, or rebirth, I should say, but I didn't quite, it didn't affect me so much in terms of how I lived my life. But as I started practicing more and more, and especially when I learned about karma, then my appreciation for rebirth deepened, and the fact of having a precious human life really made sense. Okay. And I found that then when I practiced, when I learned the Four Noble Truths, when I learned the meditations on bodhicitta, then even though those in the standard Lam Rim are more advanced topics, actually having a precious human life really started making sense once I learned those more advanced topics. So what's important when we're studying and contemplating all this is to really see how it isn't a thing of just you learn one by one by one by one and you master this topic before you go on to the next. But you learn all the Lam Rim topics and then you see how they interrelate and how not only do the beginning ones act as the basis for the later ones, but how the later topics make the beginning ones make more sense. Yeah? And you begin to see that it's not just a bunch of isolated topics, but these things really interrelate and flow into each other. Okay? So now, especially because I love the Bodhisattva path, you know, to me the Bodhisattva path is just fantastic, you know, nothing better than that. Because I have that appreciation for the Bodhisattva path, then having a precious human life where I can learn and practice that becomes really meaningful. And then the advantage of not being born in the lower realms really means something. Because I can see, oh, if I were born in the lower realms, no opportunity to learn or practice the Bodhisattva path. And then it becomes how you look at things in your life begins to change too. So I want to show you a picture in volume one. No, it's in volume two. Yeah, there's four volumes that have been published so far. Volume five comes out in August, and there's likely to be at least 9 volumes, so stay tuned. Okay, let's see if I can find this picture. No. It's a very sweet picture of one of the Abbey nuns holding another member of the Abbey community. Wait. Did they omit it from the print? From this version? It's on my computer version. Oh. I think somehow it belongs here. I'd show you, I have the computer, but I don't think you could see it unless, do you have the text? Oh, okay. Well, later maybe I can send it to you and you can put it up on the screen. It's a picture, you might have said one of our nuns holding another member of our community. You may have wondered what's going on here. We have four cats, okay? Upeka, Maitri, Karuna, Mudita, and Upeka, named after the four immeasurables. Our cats are very much part of our monastic community, and they teach us so much. They come to the teachings, okay? They're only allowed in one building. Whenever we have teachings in that building, the cats attend. They sleep through the teachings, you know, like most of you do. I'm joking. Maybe not. okay. But they remind us, watching our cats remind us of our precious human life. So this picture that, well, I'll try and find and put up on the screen, shows one of our nuns sitting in front of a tonka of the Buddha, holding one of our cats, Karuna, compassion, looking at the cat like this, you know. And the picture you see, yeah, they're both sitting in the room in front of the tonka of the Buddha. One has the ability to understand the teachings. The other hears the teachings but sleeps through them, does not have the ability to understand. But they're in the same room at the same time, having different experiences. And to me, that really points out the fortune of having our human intelligence. Because our kitties, when they get outside, we walk them on leashes, because if they just run around, they will chase the mice and the voles and the moles and the squirrels and the chipmunks, yeah. And we try to teach our kitties about the five precepts, especially the first one, not to take life, yeah. And we explain it to them over and over and over again. And they just look at us so sweetly and ignore us. So that, to me, reminds me that when my teachers explain something to me, I shouldn't just look and go, and then ignore the teaching. Yeah? Because if I do, I'm going to get involved in creating a lot of negative karma. And when we create negative karma, we're the ones who experience the result. Yeah, there's no way to blame our destructive actions on somebody else. We try very hard to. Yeah, but according to the Buddha's teachings, we are responsible for our own actions. We can't blame them on anybody else. Okay. So saying, he made me mad? Can't say that. Nobody else makes us mad. Yeah. He made me do X and X and X, and that's why I have to purify this action. No. Nobody made us. We chose. We chose. We're responsible. Mm-hmm. So this again, when we learn about karma, our precious human life is valuable because if we're really awake, then we see the choice that we have in every minute and we take advantage of that choice. When we only know the teachings at the level of our mouth, we don't take advantage of every moment of our life. We don't look at every choice we make. We basically live on automatic. Yeah? Chasing after pleasure, avoiding our own pain. Yeah. So, you know, at my first meditation course, yeah, this was in 1975, Lama Zopo was teaching, and he said, even talking about precious human life, he was saying, you have to make your life better than the life of an animal. Because if you take a dog, for example, dogs help their friends and harm their enemies. And most human beings do the exact same thing. So if you help your friends and you harm the people that you feel threatened by, or the people you don't like, or the people who interfere with you getting what you want, Rinpoche said, you're not doing anything that's exceptional for human beings. It's basically what dogs do. Yeah? Dogs see their master, they wag their tail. Oh, goody. You know, they're so affectionate to their owners and the family they belong to. But when a stranger comes, what do the dogs do? You know, that's how they earn their keep. So we do the same thing. Yeah, we don't have a tail to wag, but we flatter our friends, we give them presents, we hang out with them. Yeah, the people we don't like, we may not growl and bark, but we talk behind their back. We do what we can to interfere with them getting what they want. Yeah. We compete with them and try and be better and take advantage of them. Yeah. So we basically do the same things dogs do, but we're much more sophisticated in how we do it. So His Holiness always talks about the great gift we have of having human intelligence, and what that allows us to do, but how we often misuse our human intelligence. Yeah? And use it simply to harm other people. Mm-hmm. So here's where the topic of karma comes in. Do you see how these things are interrelated? Yeah? So let's just go through the eight freedoms and the 10 fortunes, because we may not have looked at them for a long time because we're now advanced practitioners. So the first one is, you know, be happy that you're not born in the hell realm. Okay. Now when you really think about the possibility, when you really study karma, you really think about cause and effect, and you get the feeling, you know, that things do not happen without causes, and that those causes have to be causes that are concordant with the effects. In other words, those causes have to have the potential to produce that effect. Effects do not come about from any old cause. They have to be with causes that are concordant, okay? If you want tulips, you have to plant tulip bulbs. You can't plant daisy seeds. And you can't plant chili, okay? So when we really get some feeling that what we're doing now is creating the cause for our future, and what we experience now is a result of causes we created in the past, then we really want to practice virtue and abandon non-virtue. And the fact of not having any of the eight, of being free of any of the eight unconducive states, and having the 10 fortunate states really becomes important, because without those, there's no way we can practice virtue and abstain from non-virtue. Okay? And without observing karma and its effects, which is the basic fundamental practice, ethical discipline is just the whole foundation of not only the Shravaka path, but the Bodhisattva path, and also the Tantric path. Yeah. So if we don't do that, then what are we practicing? Okay? So we now have the human intelligence to really think about cause and effect as it relates to our own life and our lives, plural, past ones, future ones. Okay? So if we're born in the hell realm, big problem. Yeah? Big problem. Because how in the world are we going to think about the Dharma when we're in incredible pain? Now, you say, well, I'll find some way, you know. I'm special, I'll find some way to think about the Dharma. Let me ask you this. When you have the cold or a flu, do you think about the Dharma when you're sick, lying in bed? Okay. When you can't think about the Dharma and practice the Dharma, when you have something innocuous as a cold, how do you think at the time of death or being born in a lower realm that you're going to have the mental wherewithal to think about the Dharma? Yeah? When you skip going to teachings because you have a mild tummy ache or because your little toe hurts, yeah, and you prefer to stay in bed, when you skip teachings because you're just a little bit tired, or you don't do noonday practice because you can't eat for a day, how are you going to practice the Dharma if you're born as a hungry ghost? Okay? So when we think like this, again, it's like, okay, I have the opportunity to practice now. I need to really guard my mind from being lazy. Yeah? Because laziness is just, well, you know, there's so many Dharma centers here in Singapore. I have so much opportunity to go and hear from many masters. So today, you know, it's like, you know, my back hurts, or, you know, I just, yeah, I really want to sit. My favorite TV program is on tonight. I have to admit that. So I'll just skip the teachings tonight, and I'll go another time, because there's so many opportunities to hear the Dharma here. Now, do you think like that sometimes? Yeah? Or it's so far to get to the Dharma Center. I have to transfer once on the MRT. And it's just too, it takes so long, and it's just so much of a problem. Yeah? Anyway, the teachings are, they stream the teachings. So I could go and listen to them live, but you know, at home, It's much more comfy to listen to the teachings. I don't have to sit there cross-legged with the teacher looking at me, seeing if I'm awake. I can sit in an easy, nice, soft chair, put my feet up, have my, what do you drink, my Milo, you know, and some biscuits, you know, and I can kind of enjoy the teachings, munching and drinking Milo. And then when the teacher talks about something not so interesting, I can get up and, you know, go to the bathroom and walk around a bit and then come back and listen to the teaching later. Maybe. Okay? So live, you know, watching the teachings online is really good for people who live in the middle of a place where there are no Dharma teachings or teachers. But when you have the opportunity to listen, you know, from a real live teacher in real time, instead of thinking that everything is this big, take that opportunity. Listening to teachings in real time makes a much stronger imprint on your mind than listening with your Milo and biscuits in hand. Okay? So take the opportunity. Okay. Yeah, so we're fortunate we're not born in the hell realm. Yeah. We're fortunate not to be born in the hungry ghost realm. Although, you know, in our modern consumer societies, we have our own version of the hungry ghost realm. Okay? The hungry ghost realm, main qualities are dissatisfaction, discontent, wanting, craving, needing, having to have, and not being able to fulfill it. So frustration. Okay? So our modern societies we have our own version of that. Yeah. In America, we have keep up with the Joneses. In Singapore, you have keep up with the Lees. Okay? If your neighbor has something that's really nice, you want it too. Yeah. If your colleagues are always going on some fancy vacation, you want to go too. Yeah. And we want the latest digital things. Yeah, don't we? Yeah, I was in, where was it, New York, when they released some new version of the iPhone. I happened to walk past the Apple store. The line was like all around the block to get the new iPhone. Wow! Because I got to be the first on the block to get the new iPhone so I can whip it out and show it to everybody else, because now I have the best one. Yeah. And in Singapore, yeah, you can't even have an old beat up car. It's illegal. In my country, you can own an old beat up car that's 20, 30, 40 years old. Here you can't. So it's an excellent excuse to get a new car whenever you can. Because the government won't let you have the old one, so you have to get a new one. Yeah. So you get a real shiny one, yeah, with all the nice things in it. You keep your car so clean. I'm so impressed in Singapore. People really keep their cars clean. In the U.S., people's cars are filthy, you know, aren't they? They have their files. They have the kids' stuff. You know, you have to fight your way to get into a seat sometimes. But here, you know, you treasure your cars, and you know, you gotta, yeah, you make sure it really shows. Mm-hmm. You want to get nice clothes, the latest things, yeah. But the one thing, you people are not as advanced on as in my country. Yeah? In my country, the young people have blue hair and pink hair. I haven't seen too much of that in Singapore. You know? But the young people in the U.S., yeah, you have a blue string here, you know? And it's kind of pink scattered through your hair. Maybe a little bit of orange. Yeah, to be like the president. yeah. But you don't have that here. So wait a few months. You'll catch up to us. Okay. But what I'm getting at is, do you see in your life how modern consumer mentality teaches you to be constantly dissatisfied? So that you always need more and better, more and better. You never have enough. What your friend has is better than what you have. Yeah, what your friend does is better than what you do. Okay. So this constant feeling of lack, even though we have plenty, don't we? Yeah. I mean, this country is so, you know, the economy is doing so well. You know, you think of, some of you have been to India. Yeah. Go to a slum in India. Go in the rural areas in India. Yeah. Even in the U.S., go to some of the rural areas. You'll see incredible poverty. Yeah. But you don't see that in Singapore. It's amazing, really amazing. Yeah. And yet still everybody wants more. Okay, so that's the hungry ghost mind. Imagine that mind manifesting as your body, manifesting as the environment around you, where you're always running around trying to get food, trying to get this or that. Yeah. Like people in Singapore run around from one store to the next store. Yeah. I went on pilgrimage once to China with a group of Singaporeans. And you know, in the Bodhisattva practice, they talk about the six perfections. Yeah, generosity, ethical conduct, fortitude, joyous effort, meditative stability, and wisdom. But I discovered that by going on pilgrimage with the Singaporeans, that they practice seven perfections. The seventh one is the perfection of shopping. Okay? Singaporeans love to shop. So we would arrive at a pilgrimage place. I would go and bow to the statues and circumambulate and do prayers. And the Singaporeans would go to the shops in front of the pilgrimage place and buy statues of what I was seeing with my eyes. They would buy the statues and the little trinkets and all sorts of snacks and things like that. Okay? So, yeah, master the perfection of shopping. Okay? So, you know, look at that mind. And when you're constantly dissatisfied, can you practice the Dharma? It's difficult. Yeah? When you always want to have what everybody else has, or better than what they have. Yeah? Difficult to practice. We already talked about being born as an animal, at least as a sweet little kitty, although I know you don't like kitties so much here. Yeah, really, kitties are wonderful. Yeah. You're making faces. They're really wonderful. We keep them as pets. I know you shoo them out, but we keep them as pets. They're quite adorable and affectionate. But if you like kitties, think about being a cockroach. Even if you don't like kitties, think of being a cockroach. Yeah? What are your chances of practicing the Dharma as a cockroach? Yeah? Difficult. Okay. So those are the three lower realms. Then the fourth one is we're not born as one of the gods in the form realm that are called the discriminationless or perceptionless gods that are in a kind of samadhi where they don't really discern anything except when they're born and they die. So they don't have problems, yeah, because they're in their meditative equipoise, but they can't practice the Dharma either. Okay, then there's four human states that we're free of. So one is living in a barbaric, uncivilized society or in a country where religion is outlawed. Now, when I started learning Buddhism, yeah, there was very little Buddhism in the country where I grew up. It essentially was a barbaric situation. It still is in many ways. Yeah, if you look at our government policy. I won't bore you with my opinions. But, yeah, there was very little opportunity to learn the Dharma when I encountered it. I had to basically quit my job and go to Nepal. Yeah. There were some ethnic temples from the Vietnamese, the Laotian, Cambodian, Japanese, Chinese communities, but there they taught the Dharma in their own language, and I could barely handle English. So I went to Nepal and India to learn. Yeah. But I do have to say that we, so far at least, have religious freedom in our country. But if you think of being born in a country where there's no religious freedom, then you really appreciate your opportunity to wake up in the morning, yeah, and come to hear Dharma teachings on the weekend. Yeah. I have a friend, Dr. Alex Burson. Some of you may know him. He's a long-term Dharma teacher. And he used to go to teach in the Soviet countries when they were still Soviet countries. I did that a little bit too, but Alex did it much more. And he was telling me that at the time he went, you know, the Iron Curtain was still very much in place. And in Czechoslovakia, he just gave the example there, to give a Dharma teaching, it had to happen at someone's home. You couldn't have a church or a temple or any religious place. Everybody had to come at the home at a different time, because if everybody came at the same time, the authorities would be suspicious that they were doing some kind of illegal political activity. Once everybody got there, the flat had two rooms, a living room and a bedroom. In the living room, they set up a round table with cards, so it looked like everybody was playing cards. Then they went in the bedroom and had the Dharma teachings. If the police came and knocked on the door, they could very quickly run from the bedroom to the living room, pick up their cards, and look like they were playing cards, so that they didn't get arrested for having religious teachings. Now think about that. What would it be like to live in a society where you could get arrested for practicing your religion. Like in Tibet, when it was overcome by the communists. Yeah, you couldn't even move your lips to say mantra. Yeah, they'd throw you in prison. Think, you know, think about that. Imagine what it would be like. Where every day, if you practiced something and you took out a postcard of the Buddha, or you took out your mala, that after you finish your practice, you would have to take it all, put it in the bottom of a drawer so that nobody else would see it. Yeah. So when we think about this, then again, we really appreciate our present opportunity. Then we also live at a place and a time where the Buddhist teachings still exist. Okay? So, this too, if you think about what it would have been like being born on this earth with human faculties and human intelligence, but the Buddha hadn't appeared and so there were no teachings. Yeah, you could learn some other spiritual tradition, but that spiritual tradition couldn't lead you to awakening, and perhaps would even make you create a lot of negativity because the people practiced animal sacrifice or some such thing. Yeah, so our incredible fortune being born at a time when the Buddha has taught and the lineage exists. Yeah, and there's teachers. And then our fortune at having a healthy body and healthy senses. Okay. Now nowadays, it's much easier for people who are blind or deaf to learn the Dharma. You know, we have Braille, we have sign language. Many centuries ago, it was extremely difficult for them. It was a big handicap. Yeah. So we're fortunate that our bodies are healthy. And we're fortunate that our mind works properly. Okay? If we have a mental handicap of some sort, such as, you know, what they call, I don't know what the political term is now. We used to call it mentally retarded. Impaired, okay? Mentally impaired, yeah? So that your intelligence is really lacking, yeah? Then again, very difficult to learn the Dharma, yeah? Because the intelligence factor isn't there. And then the last condition we're free from is being born as somebody with very severely entrenched wrong views. Yeah? So, yes, we have wrong views. But we also, our mind's a little bit flexible. We're willing to listen to the Dharma teachings and think about them. We're willing to question our views. But if we're born as somebody who just holds like this to very wrong views, yeah, then, yeah, we could be surrounded by Buddhas teaching us the Dharma and nothing's going to go in because we just cling to our wrong views. Okay? So you might say, well, what kind of wrong views? Well, for example, a thinking that there is a creator deity who is the manager of the universe. Yeah, thinking that we are here not by the force of karma, but because somebody else created us. Yeah. Now for some people, they may find that belief somehow emotionally appealing, you know, and comforting to them. But I know for me, when I encountered that view growing up, it didn't make much sense to me. Yeah. If there were a supreme deity, why did they create human beings? Well, because they were lonely. But if they're a perfect deity, they shouldn't get lonely. Why did this deity create us with suffering? So that we would learn through our suffering. Well, why didn't the deity create us smarter? Because who wants to learn from suffering if a deity could have created us smarter to start with? Okay? Or somebody who says karma and its effects, you know, that's not true. You can do anything you want. It has no ethical repercussions whatsoever. As long as you don't get caught, do whatever you want. And if you get caught, you just say you didn't do it. Or you say it's okay to do that. Yeah? Or you even announce it, what you did, and normalize it so that everybody thinks it's okay. So that when you get caught, nobody even blinks an eye. Okay? These kind of wrong views make it extremely difficult to practice the Dharma. Okay? So we're quite fortunate that despite our ignorance and our wrong views, you know, we are open-minded and willing to question. Okay? So, I better speed up. Okay, we'll go through the ten fortunes. I'll try and be quicker. So, because the fortunes correspond with the freedoms. So the first one is being a human being with human intelligence. Yeah, so we already talked about that. Living in a central Buddhist area. Okay. Living in a place where you can get teachings. And, you know, how a central Buddhist area is defined is by there being a Sangha community, not an individual, but a community that does the Vinaya practices, specifically the Vinaya practices, the fortnightly confession and restoration of precepts, that's called Posada, yeah, the summer retreat called Varsa, the invitation at the end of the summer retreat called Pravarana, yeah. And those are the three basic ones. So to have a Sangha community of fully ordained people where they do those practices. Because there's some places where you might have Sangha members, but there aren't four of them. You have to have four to do those practices. Maybe you only have three. Or maybe you have five, but none of them are fully ordained. Okay. Or maybe you have four and they're fully ordained, but they don't do those three practices. Okay? So here in Singapore, I assume the Sangha is doing... I know. We've visited some of the nunneries here in Singapore. We know they do the Posada. Yesterday we visited one nunnery. We were talking about the Varsa, the summer retreat, the Pravarana, the ceremony that comes at the end of it. Yeah, so here in Singapore, yes, you have fully ordained bhikshunis. I think the Theravada monks probably do those three ceremonies as well, so you have that. But in my country, very difficult. Very difficult. Yeah? Because there aren't so many Sangha members. And in the Tibetan tradition, the nuns don't have access to the full ordination. So the three of us went to Taiwan and received the full ordination from the Chinese Dharmaguptaka lineage. Uh-huh. But in the Tibetan community, the nuns are handicapped in that way, unfortunately. Okay, so, you know, we live in a place where that is a central land, where you have the opportunity to encounter the Sangha community, and you too could even ordain. You pass out. No, never. I fainted. Think about it. Think about it. It's a wonderful life. And ABC needs to think about where all your Sangha members have gone. Because you used to have several monks and nuns. I don't see them now. Yeah? But anyway, think about it. Okay, the third one is having a healthy body and mind. So we talked about that already. Not having committed the five heinous actions. Yeah, killing our father, killing our mother, killing an arhat, causing blood to drawing blood from a Buddha, and causing schism in the Sangha. Okay. But this raises some questions. The first two, killing our mother and killing our father. Is euthanasia or what do they call it? Choosing your death? What?
Assisted suicide.
Yeah. Is that a topic here in Singapore? Are you talking about that? Again, in my country, it's talked about a lot because many people who are terminally ill, they want to have the choice of taking some medicine and, you know, essentially killing themselves so in order to end the suffering of their terminal illness. So this is a big topic of conversation. The government is dealing with it. There's many different opinions on it. But it's something to think about, because even if assisted suicide is legal, if, let's say, our mother or our father is in severe pain from a terminal illness, and they say to us, you know, please help me get the meds so I can just, you know, take a lot of sleeping pills and be put out of my misery. Are we going to do that? Are we going to engage in assisted suicide? Even the doctor says it's okay. Even our parents request it. Yeah? Because that's killing our mother and father. Okay? So to be careful about that kind of thing. Okay? And then the next quality, the fifth one, is believing in things worthy of respect, such as the Vinaya as the basis of Dharma practice, the three baskets of teaching, Vinaya, Sutra, and Abhidharma, you know, that speak about ethical conduct, concentration, and wisdom. We have faith in those kinds of things. Yeah? So again, you know, we often don't appreciate our own spiritual yearnings. We don't appreciate our own faith in the Buddhist teachings. Yeah? But we should respect ourselves as spiritual practitioners. Okay, we are not perfect practitioners. We have a long way to go. But we should respect the faith and trust and willingness to engage in practice that we do have right now. Okay? And I say this because many times we don't appreciate our own virtue, and we compare ourselves to other people, and whenever we compare ourselves, we come out lacking. So I'll give you an example. Yeah? When years ago, when I looked around it at my Dharma brothers and sisters who had all begun to practice around the same time I had, I looked at them and they had so much faith. And I looked at myself and I had so much doubt. And I thought, oh, these people are they really practice so well. You know, when they look at our teacher, they see our teacher as perfect. Yeah, they just have so much faith in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. They make elaborate offerings. And I'm sitting here and like, I go to a Dharma teaching and I ask one question after another after another. Okay? So my teacher's always looking, oh, there she is again, Miss Question Box. Yeah. And I thought, oh, my Dharma brothers and sisters, they practice so much better than I do, you know? I'm really lacking. But, you know, I have to ask my questions. I can't make myself have faith if I don't understand something. I can't. You know, but they seem to have this incredible faith, and I was like, nah. So I didn't appreciate my own spiritual longing, my own spiritual, capability. Because the Buddha actually said we should investigate and analyze and ask questions. Yeah. But my Dharma brothers and sisters, they looked like perfect students, and I didn't look like one. But then, interestingly, 20, 30 years later, I'm still here. And some of them aren't. Yeah. So it really made me think, that we should not compare ourselves to other Dharma practitioners. Yeah, we should not do that, because our job is to practice, the Dharma as we can, and we're never really sure who's a good practitioner and who's a bad one, who's going to last a long time and who isn't. Yeah. So don't compare yourself to other people. Yeah. But rather respect and appreciate your own interest. Yeah. And respect and appreciate your own intelligence and ask questions. Yeah. Nagarjuna in Precious Garland was saying, if you don't ask questions of the wise, then it's cause to be born as somebody who's dumb. I don't know about you, but I'm already dumb enough. Okay, I don't need to create more karma for being dumb. Okay. Then the five fortunate factors. The Buddha was alive. The Buddha gave teachings, and the lineage still exists. Okay, and those teachings still exist, and they're flourishing in your country. Only an MRT ride away, not so far. Okay, and then there's Dharma teachers, monastics, and other like-minded people who you can practice with. Yeah, so you can come and meditate together with other people, discuss the Dharma with your Dharma friends. Yeah, you don't have to keep it all hidden. Very fortunate. And then you have the material wherewithal to be able to practice. You're not living in a country where there's very little food, or shelter, or extreme drought, or extreme floods. Yeah? If you're a monastic, you have sponsors, you have people who support you so you can continue to do your practice. Yeah? This also is difficult in the West for Western monastics, because there's not so many Buddhists there, and because the country is mostly there's a lot of people who are non-believers, but of the Christians, most are Protestant, so they don't have monks and nuns. So there isn't even a tradition like the Catholics of supporting practitioners. So it's something that really has to be learned in the Western situation. But you have everything here. Yeah, so take advantage of it. Mm-hmm. Really take advantage. And it's hard to have this kind of rebirth again. Yeah, when we look at the causes, you know, what the karma we have to create to have a precious human life, because not every human life is a precious human life. Most human lives are not precious ones, because most human beings don't have the 8 freedoms and the 10 fortunes to be able to practice the Dharma in a real wholehearted way. Yeah? So to create those causes, we need to keep good ethical conduct just to have the human life part of it. Okay. When you look around in society, how many people keep good ethical conduct? Yeah? I think many of you have studied about the 10 on virtues to avoid. Killing, stealing, unwise sexual behavior, lying, divisive speech, harsh words, idle talk, coveting, malice, and wrong views. How many people do you know who abandon all 10 of those? Do you abandon all 10 of those? Yeah? When we really look, boy, it's difficult to keep really good ethical conduct. It's not an easy practice. Yeah. Everybody wants to go and take initiations. Yeah, they're offering initiations. I'm going. Yeah. And the less I understand, the bigger the blessing I got. Because the Lama was up there ringing his bell, handing out holy water, ringing the drum. There were the long horns, you know. He's sitting on a big throne, lots of brocade, a big hat, you know, a yellow hat, a red hat, a black hat. Big hats, yeah. At the Abbey, we wear sun hats. Yeah, we're the sun hat sect. Yeah. And the lamas, they give you the initiation, you know, and all you understand is kneel, repeat after me. But what do you repeat after me? You know, do you understand it? Yeah. I have people coming to me after they've been at an initiation ceremony saying, I don't know if I took the initiation or not. I said, did you take the Bodhisattva vows? Did you take the Tantric vows? I don't know if I took them. Yeah. But I was there, and I got the long life pills, and I got the holy water. And I got a string, and see all my strings? I have 10 or 20 strings. Some here. Yeah. And most important, I got a wealth vase. And I have not just one wealth vase, but 15 of them. Because the wealth vases are going to make me wealthy. Yeah. So, you know, I got to go take, you know, red Zambala, yellow Zambala. I'm going to take all the Zambala empowerments. I don't understand anything. I don't know if I even received the initiation. But I got all the accoutrements.
And it was advertised as a once-in-a-lifetime thing from this very precious, holy being. So I was there, and I got as much out of it as a fly on the wall. But when the Lama gave teachings, I didn't go. Because teachings are for babies. I am an advanced tantric Vajrayana practitioner. Contemplating bliss and emptiness all the time. And I am a special disciple of my teacher. I'm one of the fortunate few close disciples. Yeah. Did I show you the picture of me and Rinpoche together? Did I show you that picture? Yeah? Isn't it a nice picture? Me and Rinpoche together. And he even signed it. Two children with love, you know, Rinpoche. Do you have a picture of you and Rinpoche together? Oh, you don't. Oh, that's too bad. Let me show you. I have not only a picture with this Rinpoche, I have another picture with this Rinpoche. He's rather wrathful. Maybe we'll trade him in for this Rinpoche. This one's a little bit more peaceful. So here's, you know, the second Rinpoche. I have a signed, autographed picture with me and Rinpoche. Isn't that cute? Isn't that cute? Yeah, so nice. I'm bending over, offering a kata, because I'm such a disciple with so much faith and earnestness. And you know what? Rinpoche even rode in my car. Yeah, he rode in my car. Did he ride in your car? Oh, he didn't? Oh, that's too bad. Maybe sometime when he's in my car, you can sit in the trunk. Okay. So we may be close to the Dharma, but creating the actual causes to have a precious human life, not so easy. Yeah, we get swept away by the eight worldly concerns, especially in the Dharma realm. Huh? No, in the Dharma realm. Yeah, I'm making Dharma Dhatu a pun out of Dharma Dhatu, because Dharma Dhatu is the Dharma realm of emptiness, but the Dharma realm I'm talking about is being a student and collecting all the things that make you look holy. But your motivation is not very holy. Okay? And, you know, this is very easy to fall into. Very, very easy. Okay? So we have to be careful of it, because to create the cause for precious human life, we really need to keep pure ethical conduct, and we need to practice the six perfections, okay? So just the first one, generosity. Yeah, I don't know about you, I find generosity very difficult. Yeah. They talk in the scriptures about some old woman, and she had problem with generosity. I think maybe I'm her future rebirth. But she was so stingy that the Buddha gave her a carrot, and she had to practice giving the carrot from one hand to the other hand just to practice giving. Yeah, so that's kind of my level, okay? Yeah, when I lived in Dharamsala, I didn't have very much money. I was quite poor. But compared to the Indian beggars, I was wealthy. I had at one time $50 to my name. That was it, living in India. And I would go to the marketplace to buy groceries. And there were the line of lepers. We got to know all the lepers in Dharamsala in those days. And chai was only 25 pesa then. You know, now what is a cup of chai? Much more, maybe 10. But 25 pesa, yeah? And I had difficulty even giving 25 pesa to the beggars. Because I was afraid, if I gave it, I won't have it. And I had Geshe Nawang Darge hardwired in my brain, talking about the advantages of generosity and the disadvantages of stinginess. You know, I was studying with Geshe Nawang Darge at the library at the time. And Geshe-la's teachings are going around in my mind. And I'm going, oh, but it's 25 pesa. Yeah, 25 pesa is a quarter of 1 rupee. And I had trouble even giving that, the cost of a cup of tea. Okay? So practicing the six perfections, not so easy for some of us. Yeah? To separate from the things that we like. Yeah? Or to give with a really generous heart. Yeah. What happened, you know what really changed my mind about that? Is years later I was living, we were starting a monastery in France, and the nuns were living in the horse stables. Yeah? Wonderful, yeah, horse stables. And it got really cold in the winter, really, really cold. And I didn't have enough money to pay for heating because we had to pay for our own heating. We didn't have benefactors who did that. And so I didn't have enough money to pay for my heating. So I did a lot of prostrations during the winter because that's how I kept warm. Yeah, as I did prostrations. And at one point, I just sat myself down and I said, children, the reason you are so poor is because you've been stingy. Yeah. And if you don't change, this situation is not going to change. And even in future lives, you're not going to have the material things you need. So I said to myself, you have to start giving. Even if you just give a little bit. So, I bullied myself, you know, into practicing a little bit of generosity. And it's amazing because now I'm quite well taken care of. Yeah. Really kind of amazing. Really amazing. Yeah. So I really believe in karma. I believe in karma. And I believe that sometimes, you know, we have to push ourselves to abandon non-virtue and create virtue. But if we do that, not push ourselves with, you know, a wrathful, you know, like, go do it, kiddo. Not like that. But, you know, like, come on. We've got to nudge ourselves, encourage ourselves. Yeah. Just do a little bit. Yeah. Start with a little bit of practice. Do a little bit. And then you do that and you feel better. Yeah. You feel better about yourself. So then you've had some experience and you say, okay, then I can do a little bit more. And then you start doing a little bit more. And then, before you know it, you've created the cause for a precious human life. But we have to purify also. See, here's the topic of karma coming again. How to create virtue, how to abandon virtue, how to purify. It's coming right here in the first meditation on precious human life. Okay. So, we got through precious human life, and with 6 minutes to spare. So, we can have some Q&A. Yes.
Mm. Do you think that's more innate than you learn?
We have both. Some wrong views are innate, like the grasping at true existence. But here we're talking about wrong views such as like karma doesn't exist, what is the path to awakening, it isn't really the path. You know, those kind of wrong views. And some of those are innate, but some of them we learn. Yeah? We learn from our parents, we learn from a society. If we grew up in another religion, we learn from that religion. Yeah? So we always have to look, you know, because very often wrong views, they're hiding in some little nook or cranny of our mind. Yeah, but then when we start to see where our resistance is to some Buddhist teachings, yeah, then we start to notice where those nooks and crannies of wrong views are. You know, because like, oh, I love that teaching, but this teaching I don't like so much. Yeah, so what is it that I'm holding on to? You know, like when, you know, the teachings on love, everybody likes hearing about love. The teachings on the disadvantages of samsara, let's see, I'm busy that day. Can't go to that teaching. Okay, we don't like that one because it makes us really sober and look at our life. So, you know, to see where our resistance is. And there we'll find very often some wrong views or some emotional grasping at something. Mm-hmm. Other questions? Yeah.
I'm a bit excited to talk, but I have a specific question.
Oh, I can't. Can you speak louder or turn them?
Is it switched on? Everyone can hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm a bit excited to talk today. I belong to the Theravada tradition. I was ordained in Thailand also a couple of years ago. And I have a specific question to you, as I'm also fond of your tradition and things. Usually in Thailand we say karma, from the word karma, Pali word karma, means acting, and we call it fruit of karma. So the responses, what we get from our own acting. And just to avoid confusion, in your tradition, if you say karma, are you referring to the effects, or are you referring actually on the acting of...
Okay. So sometimes I know I and other people, we use the word karma in a rather general way, sometimes referring to the cause, sometimes referring to the effect. But the actual proper way of using the word is karma refers to the cause, yeah? And particularly, you know, the actions that we do, the volitional or intentional actions that we do. And so those actions leave imprints or seeds on our mental continuity. And then those seeds will ripen in terms of our experience, okay? Huh? It's the same as in the Theravada, yeah. Yeah, the idea of karma is the same in the two traditions. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Venerable, just now you are saying that in the West you have been talking about assisted suicide.
Mm.
In Singapore, we have this so-called, you sign a will to tell the doctor that when you are medically totally very, very sick, you don't want the doctors to continue to put the machines on you. Mm-hmm. So does that sort of decision results in you telling yourself to say, making yourself commit suicide, and the people, your families who help you to say that yes, pull the plug, causes the action of killing.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's difficult once the plug is in to pull the plug. If, and that's why I think it's very important that we all make these kind of advanced directives, you know, that state what we want if we're incapable of expressing ourselves at some point. So some people may want medical help all the way, even when it's impossible. And other people may say, you know, for example, if I'm a vegetable, I can't, you know, I'm unconscious for a long time, and a second doctor affirms what my first doctor said, that, you know, very highly unlikely that I'll come out of the coma, then pull the plug. Okay? So saying that is not suicide. And if we write that, it saves our relatives from having to make that decision. Yeah? Because then they are just doing what we ask them to do, and the doctors are doing what we ask to do. Yeah? And so different people are going to have different ideas about this. Even if maybe you don't have an assisted, an advanced directive, yeah, the family may still be presented with the choice to give you, maybe you're not hooked up on a machine, but they could continue to treat you, or they could stop treatment and you could be in a hospice. Yeah, and some families think we've got to give treatment up until the very last minute of their life. And other people say, actually, you know, if I'm dying, let me die. I'm, you know, death is a natural process. I'd much rather be aware when I'm dying instead of full of drugs. You know, and they have many palliative options now that stop intense suffering so that somebody can die peacefully without having to be, let's say, on chemotherapy forever, or without, if you have a heart attack, them doing CPR to get your heart to beat. You know, because sometimes, in the case of many young people, or sometimes with old people, you do CPR, the heart starts beating again. Many cases, you do CPR, the heart doesn't stop, and there the person is, they're dying, while other people are beating on their chest and pushing them and shooting the drugs into them, and it's not very peaceful. And so some people say, look, I'm old. If I, you know, have a heart attack, let me go. Yeah. So it's an individual decision. Yeah. Yes, in the back.
Hello, can you hear me?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If a cancer patient who take morphine, does it mean that we indirectly commit suicide for them?
But just by giving somebody morphine to control pain?
I mean,
pain?
Towards the... towards
yeah,
the
just end. To control pain, no, that isn't suicide.
Okay.
Yeah, you can take morphine in palliative care. For people who are in extreme pain, they'll give them morphine, but not enough to kill them.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Okay. And again, some people, when they're dying, they want pain relief. Other people don't. It's quite individual.
Afternoon, Venerable. I want to ask this question about right livelihood.
About what?
Right livelihood. For example, in my course of work, right, I do alcohol. So what do you think that it will be like negative karma?
What do you think? Yeah, what do you think?
Because it's like part of the job scope, you see. So
yeah, it may be part of your job, but what do you think about the virtue or non-virtue of serving alcohol?
Okay, understand.
I think you can answer your own question. Yeah? Okay, so let's pause now for lunch. The high point of the day. You can wake up now and eat. But she's not going to serve you any alcohol. So let's dedicate.
Due to this merit, may we soon attain the awakened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi mind, not yet born, arise and grow. May the born have no decline, but increase forevermore.